This is Digital Story Podcast number 605, October 17th, 2017. Today's theme is Fire Coming Down the Mountain. I'm Derek Story. Being a native Californian, fires have always been part of my life. I remember as a kid, it seemed like every time the dry winds would come up, we called them Santa Ana winds when I lived in Southern California, which means the winds came from the other direction. They were not coming from the ocean, but were coming either from the north or from the east. Whenever those Santa Ana winds would show up, trouble usually wasn't far behind. And all it took was a spark, a cigarette butt, just about anything, and then fire. Having seen fire my whole life, I've never seen anything like I've witnessed over the last week, and that's the subject for today's show. Every September, my family would go to the county fair. This is when I lived in Southern California. We lived in Chino and then Upland, and so the county fair was in Pomona, California. And around that area in Southern California, there are hills. Seemed like more often than not, here I was at the fair doing all the things that a kid does at the fair. And then you'd look up and then you would see smoke on the mountain. Sometimes you'd even see flames, the fires kicking up, which they always did, it seemed like, that time of year. I had friends that lived in Arrowhead, Idlewild, Big Bear, all those areas in Southern California that were resort areas, really, and they were up in the mountains, and it got folks, you know, out of the flatlands there. It was a good life, especially during the summer. You could cool off a little bit up there. It was, you know, more shady, more rural, and, you know, overall, kind of a nicer pace. The problem was, of course, that those hills, sooner or later, would burn. It's sort of like a hard drive crash. It's not if your hard drive is going to crash, it's when your hard drive is going to crash. Fire in those hills was always inevitable. As such, you know, I never really wanted to live in the mountains. I mean, I love visiting the mountains. I spend a lot of time in the mountains. I enjoy just about everything, you know, about being up there. But I never wanted to have a house up there. And I think a lot of this came out of my childhood, just having seen, you know, friend after friend either have their house endangered by fire or lose it altogether. So in my adult life, I've always been more of a valley boy. And, you know, come down to the flatlands, usually with, you know, mountains in the backdrop there. But, you know, be on the flatlands, be where they're, in all honesty, more concrete, more asphalt around you, and, you know, not a bunch of tinder that makes it easy for the fire to spread. And this has worked out quite well for me. So I live down from Shiloh Mountain, and Shiloh Park is right up behind me. But I mean, I walk to Shiloh Park from my house all the time and go hiking there. So I can get to the mountains, but I'm not in the mountains. And then my studio, where I'm recording this right now, I'll talk more about that in a second. My studio is in the middle of town. I've always considered the studio a bit of a safe house across from Schultz Museum, right here in the center of Santa Rosa. And that has been my studio for many years now. And it's a wonderful place. I love working here. Dibs, the cat, lives here and guards the place for me. I always sort of considered, because of its location and because I'm right here by the Children's Museum and Schultz Museum and Redwood Empire Ice Skating Rink and, you know, Cottingtown Mall, Whole Foods, you know, all that stuff. I mean, one of the things that's always appealed to me about working here at the studio is that once I get here, I never have to drive. I can take care of everything that I need to do either on foot or by bicycle. And Santa Rosa is a fantastic place for riding your bike. It's relatively flat. We have bike lanes everywhere. Bicycling is part of the culture here. So I always knew that even if something happened up at Corbett, you know, where my house is up by Shiloh, even if something happened there, that I would always have, you know, the studio to fall back on, you know, in a temporary situation. I mean, we all don't want to live here, believe me, but I knew in a temporary way, this was always in my back pocket. So it's interesting that on Sunday night, we call it Sunday night, it was technically Monday morning because it was about 1:15 in the morning. It was Sunday night when we went to bed. And as far as I'm concerned, it was still dark when I got up, and so it was still Sunday night. But anyway, it was interesting that that whole thing, all that reasoning, got turned upside down, turned on its head. It's very interesting how we found out about the fire first approaching the house. We had just taken our son down to San Francisco Airport to send him off on a working trip to Italy. And it had been quite a big deal. It's the first time that he's gone to Europe by himself. I mean, he's working with people, but, you know, he's essentially on his own. And getting him ready and making sure that, you know, he had all his T's crossed and his I's dotted. It was a big deal. And it was exhausting, quite honestly. And he had a very late flight, you know, because that's just the way that worked out. We sent him off. His flight was out at 11. We got out of there about 10. And so then we drove home. And after all of this getting ready and all this sort of stuff, we were exhausted. And so, you know, just passed out right away, probably around 11:30 or something like that. About 1 o'clock, we get a call from our other son who's going to school down in Santa Clara. And he says, "Are you guys all right?" His mom answers the phone and she says, "Yes, we got Zach sent off okay." And he goes, "No, I'm talking about the fire." And she goes, "What fire?" And he said, one of his buddies who's still here in Santa Rosa called him and asked him if his family was okay. He didn't know, you know, my son didn't know what was going on. So then he called us right away. We went and looked outside, and we looked up our street, and there's a school at the end of our street. And right behind the school, the whole sky was filled with smoke, and there were flames flaring up behind the school. And we're probably about, you know, 6-7 houses down the street from the school. Oh my gosh. The winds had been going, you know, we knew that we were in those conditions. Whenever the winds here start coming from the north or the northeast, what they do is they dry everything out. It's already late in the season. We haven't had our rains yet. We're not like the East Coast where we get rains during the summer. We get no rain during the summer. Our rainy season will end in June, and we won't see rain again until usually November. Everything was very dry, and when the winds turn around and come out of the north or the northeast, those are northern winds. So when the northern winds come, instead of the westerly winds, which are coming off the ocean, which are damp winds and you know, raise the humidity, the northern winds lower the humidity, and they can be quite fierce. And in fact, that night, they had been up around 50 miles an hour in many of our areas. I remember before I went to bed, I went out on the back patio and, you know, I lowered the umbrellas. I folded them all up. And, you know, just so that, you know, the wind was whipping through there, and I didn't want it to trash things any more than, you know, than necessary. So I kind of battened down the hatches a bit. It's just part of living here. This time it was different. Up in Calistoga, which is northeast of us, we still don't know the cause. We still don't know how it happened, but a fire started up there. And because of the direction of the winds blew that fire, and it's called the Tubbs Fire. I'm sure you've seen it on the news. It blew that fire essentially right down into Santa Rosa, torched everything in its path. And it was fast moving. And because the fire started at night, really about 10 o'clock on Sunday night, because it started at night, everything just happened a little bit slower in terms of response, in terms of people's awareness, all that kind of stuff. Same thing happened to other people, happened to us. You wake up and knock on the door, honking horn, someone calls you, and you step outside, and then you see a fire at your front door. And, you know, you have to regroup. You have to, you know, get your head around this and start doing stuff. My brother-in-law and his wife, who live in Fountain Grove, they had a knock on the door from the sheriff and had to just leave. They didn't even have time to grab anything but their two cats. They grabbed their two cats and left, and that was all they had time for. They left everything else, just barely got out of there in time. Their house went down, as did all their neighbors' houses. The Fountain Grove area, this beautiful area that really kind of one of the pride and joy neighborhoods of Santa Rosa. I think in my brother's area, there are two or three houses standing, and that's it. That's it. And I mean, why those two or three are there, you know, who knows, right? Other than that, you can just basically see forever. And so they had, you know, very little notice. And this fire was raging down. We just threw what we had, what we could, in 5 or 10 minutes. I threw a bunch of stuff into the van, which was kind of a dicey call anyway. You know, the Vanagon, you know, because as you guys know, who have been listening to the show, the Vanagon had its own incident during the summer when, you know, I thought I was going to lose it. And I thought it gave out on me. And then I've been, you know, working on it a bit and driving it around and nursing it back to health. But because it has that big slider door that opens, it was just like the perfect choice just to throw things in, slide the door closed, and then bug out. Teresa bugged out in her car. We got into the evacuation line, which, as you know, is very nerve-wracking if you've ever been through anything like this, because you don't get to just drive away. You're there with everyone else. People are trying to, you know, merge into the evacuation lanes, and it's very slow. It requires a lot of patience. You get separated. You're talking to each other on cell phones going, "No, where are you? Where are you? Okay, here I am. What route do you think we ought to take? You know, that's closed over there. Let's try this." You know, all that kind of stuff. So I'm doing this, and I'm in the van, and I'm thinking while I'm in the van, I'm going, "Boy, I hope this thing holds together." Because you're you know, just sitting there, and it's going chick, 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 like that, right? And I'm, you know, so there were a couple times when I was starting to question, you know, my decision. As it worked out, the van held together great, got me down to the studio, which is where we agreed to rendezvous. Right now, I have it all organized. All of our clothes are in there, and it's like a big walk-in closet right now. The main reason why I kept them in there is because after we were at the studio for about an hour, thinking, okay, here we are at the safe house. We had a bunch of animals. We had a bunch of family. You know, we're just trying to figure out how this was all going to work. We get a knock on the door, and the knock on the door was mandatory evacuation. When you get a knock on the door in these situations, that's a mandatory evacuation. That is not an optional evacuation. And I'm just going, "You've got to be kidding me. We are in the middle of town here from a fire that started in Calistoga up the hill, up the mountain, and we are in danger." And sure enough, outside, billowing smoke, flames just up a block. Kmart burned down, that was right up there. Both of the hospitals just north of us were in danger. They suffered some damage, although they survived. But then entire shops and commercial areas, not to mention whole housing tracts, were destroyed. We had to bug out again. And so what I did was I just left everything that I had taken from the house in the van, hoping that it would survive and figure that it would suffer the least amount of smoke damage if we did survive. So off we go again. And this time it was literally, you know, I had dibs in a carrier because she was here at the studio. So I picked her up. I had dibs in a carrier. I had the clothes that I was wearing. I grabbed a few camera bags and a few laptops and, you know, out we went. Our next stop was out to Bennett Valley, which at that time was a safe zone, and we had family out there. And so we show up there. Again, the evacuation was agonizing. We get out there, and now we're at about 4 o'clock in the morning. At this point now, we're starting to be a little tired. And just kind of all flopped there. Got a couple hours sleep, not much, is very restless. The next day, we started hearing about the Nuns Valley fire that was coming from the other direction. Starting to see a lot of smoke show up in Bennett Valley. And sure enough, we had to evacuate from there. So at this point now, we had picked up more family members. We're just kind of, you know, like a snowball here, right? You know, just like everywhere that we evacuated to, we accumulated more people that became part of the caravan. And, you know, the interesting thing at this point was that my brother-in-law and his wife, Pat and Sue, they had access to a cabin that was way out on the Russian River, way out west of where we were right now. They were staying, as I mentioned earlier, they had to leave with nothing but the clothes on their back. They were staying with her mom, and so the cabin was open. We ended up going out to the cabin and setting up shop there. So we had, you know, basically all the family and animals that we had gathered along the way were in this rustic cabin up in the mountains above the Russian River. And I posted a picture of me there not too long ago. That's where we lived for the second part of the week. And then the studio, the evacuation around the studio had been lifted, or they didn't officially lift it until yesterday, but people were allowed to move back in. You know, the evacuation area where my house is, you can't get in there. You can't get in there because, you know, they're worried about looting and all that sort of stuff. So it is literally sealed off. And so a lot of people don't know their situation. They don't know if their house is there. They don't know anything at all. And I actually got in there, that area, on Thursday. And there was a couple reasons I needed to get in there. And so, as some of you can guess, animals had something to do with it. And also just wanting to see if my house was there. I always kind of knew of this route where I could get into our area there if I had to. Not the safest route in the world. It involved, you know, a little bit of bushwhacking and going over some tall fences. But I just made up my mind that I needed to see the house, and I wanted to take care of some of the animals that I knew were hanging around there. At this point, they hadn't had food or water for a couple days. One thing I learned, that I'm not as nimble as I used to be in terms of climbing fences and getting over them safely. And there was one moment when I made it up to the top of this wooden fence that had been there for quite a while. And I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I was on the top of the fence, and the fence was starting to wobble a bit. One of two things was going to happen. Either I was going to fall and possibly injure myself, which would not have been good because I wasn't supposed to be there in the first place. Who knows how long I would have had to stay there. Or I was going to make it and be able to jump to the ground. And you know, when you're just like on that precipice where you don't know what's going to happen, it seems like a long time. I'm sure it's only a second or two, but it seems like a long time. Anyway, I did not fall. I maintained my balance and I was able to jump, and I landed on the other side. So I'm walking up the street there. It was surreal. There was no one there. We put the trash out on Sunday night. So all the trash cans were out. All the cars that were left behind were out. You know, everything was there, but people were not. I scampered up to the house, and the first thing that I saw and was really that the house was there. And not only was my house there, but my neighbor's houses were there. So somehow, you know, our little piece of the valley there, even though we were very close to the hills, our little piece of the valley had survived to this point. I fed the animals. I just, you know, filled up their bowl, you know, beyond full, filled it up with water and said, you know, guys, it's going to have to last you for a bit. And then I took off because I didn't want, if I got caught, then obviously my driver's license said that I lived there, but I was still technically breaking the law at that point. And fortunately, I was able to get back in one more time. This time, officially, I talked a police officer into escorting me in so I could get the car. We had a car there that I needed. And that gave me another chance to feed the animals again and get the car. And so they've had two meals over the last week. Now, these are feral cats, so you know, hopefully they're finding food otherwise, but I'm sure it's not easy to find right now. And the tap water in Larkfield is not drinkable right now, so I wanted them to have water out of my canteen and not drink water somewhere else. So now I'm at the studio. We've relocated to the studio, and I'm recording this on Saturday. I have electricity here. And I have clean running water here, and I actually have internet here. We don't have gas yet, so we don't have any hot water or any heating or anything. But, you know, compared to everything else, it feels pretty good to be here right now. So this is where we'll be living for the time being. The system that we're using here in Sonoma County to help, there's all sorts of ways to go about it, but the system that we're using for civilians like me is that the idea is you find someone that you know, one degree of separation, that needs help, and you help them. So instead of us going to, say, going to the Red Cross and saying, we're going to volunteer for the Red Cross and all that, there is a lot of that going on. But the approach that we're taking up here, since so many people have been affected by this disaster, is that find someone that you can help directly and then help them. Because, you know, we can't give food that isn't sealed up and stuff. We can't donate that. We can't. There's a lot of things we can't do because they're trying to run an operation here. And, you know, you can't give a box of cookies that you baked to the Red Cross to distribute to people because they're not sealed up. But what you can do is help someone directly. And I love this system, by the way, because first of all, when you're helping people that you know that need help, you also know what they need, right? And you also know a little bit about them, and you can help them in a way that works for them. In terms of what we eat what we can, when we can, and, you know, call the day there. So, you know, all of that. So you spend a lot of time, you know, really just trying to find gas, trying to find some food, trying to, you know, find some services that are open. A lot of services are still closed. And that's very time consuming. It's fascinating to me how time consuming life is, you know, when you don't have, you know, all the modern conveniences. It's fascinating how hard it is to post an article on the web when you don't have, you know, a computer that can connect to the internet. And you have to do it through cell phones. By the way, we lost, I don't know how many cell phone towers. So even though we did have cell phone connectivity, the bandwidth was very narrow. So even things like posting a picture on a blog suddenly became, you know, very difficult. I've had three posts on the digital story since this started. Each of those posts that would normally take me about an hour, each of those posts would end up taking me, you know, 3-4 hours, half a day, just to do something that, you know, normally I could do in an hour. And that's just because of all the constraints. You know, one of the posts, I just literally had to go somewhere and try to find some Wi-Fi. I posted a picture on Instagram. I found a Starbucks that was closed, but they had left their Wi-Fi on. I was standing outside there and it was closed, and I was disappointed because it was about my fifth try on a place. And I was disappointed, and I go, I wonder if I can get the Wi-Fi out here. You know, when you have those little glimmers. And so I pulled out my phone and I checked, and their Wi-Fi was on, and they still had some tables outside. And, you know, they were covered in ash and cinders, but, you know, just dusted things. And by this point, you know, you've been wearing the same clothes for, you know, 3-4 days anyway. Dusted a few things off, sat there, used the Wi-Fi, and actually got a little bit of work done. And again, you know, it's wild, the things that you don't anticipate, because, for instance, I had shorts on, and my one leg was all kind of scraped up. I had put Neosporin on it, but it was all scraped up. And it's covered in Neosporin and stuff. So the Vespin wasps that are meat eaters hadn't really had any food either. And so then you're sitting there, and then, you know, you're constantly tortured by these creatures. Stuff you would never think of otherwise. Here's the prognosis now. So obviously we're back on track with the podcast, and we'll keep publishing. I actually have to travel tomorrow, so I'll be traveling. I'll be gone when you listen to this. I have to take off on Sunday because, as I said, I have a son in Europe, and I'm going to meet him in New York, and we have a couple things we have to do, and then I'm going to help him get back here because it's always sort of difficult getting back from New York to California. Almost always there are cancellations and delays and all that kind of stuff. So I'll be gone doing that. Hopefully when I'm back midweek, probably about the time you're listening to this, we'll be able to move into the house, or that evacuation zone will open up. And then we start putting things back together. In the meantime, I should have all my services back here at the studio by then. And so when I get back, getting a little bit of work done and then getting our life back together, I'm sure we're going to have to pull everything out of the house, the drapes and all that stuff, and get everything cleaned and stuff so that It doesn't smell too bad in there, and we'll see what the extent of the smoke damage is once we finally get to hang out in there. So, you know, life will still be kind of different for transitional period. And then I'm hoping once we get into late November and stuff that we can get some rhythm back. In the meantime, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. Those of you, we'll still have a Nimble class on November 4th. We'll still have our workshop later this month. And, you know, we're just going to keep, we're going to keep going forward. In closing, a couple thoughts come to mind. One is, you know, my heart goes out to anyone involved in this firestorm. And there's a number of them up here who have had loss, who have had any kind of loss at all. I want to, you know, express my condolences and my heartfelt hope that they'll be able to rebuild. And hopefully there wasn't a loss of life, but we know there's loss of animal life. We know there's loss of property. Anyone up here who's had any sort of loss at all, I just want to express my empathy and encourage rebuilding as quickly as possible, as quickly as makes sense. And then secondly, the thing I want to say is that really want to thank all of you. I just had an outpouring of support, you know, during this whole thing on Facebook in particular. And just thank you. Thank you for your thoughts. Thank you for your concern. Thank you for your blessings on this. And it really meant a lot to me. It was, you know, it was heartfelt. I could feel it. Very thankful to have all of you help me through this time. And, you know, we're very lucky. We are so lucky. Our family's lucky. Even though my brother-in-law and Sue lost their place, you know, they're alive. Their animals are alive. And, you know, we'll help them rebuild. Overall, we're one of the lucky ones. And I'm thankful for that. Now, my focus with our community is to let's get back to business, let's get back to work, let's get back to what we do, which is, you know, creating art which makes people feel better. And I'll give you updates here and there, but, you know, my focus now with all of you is let's get back to work. Let's make the world a better place, and you and I have the ability to make people feel better, so let's do that. Alrighty? Thanks again for all of your support, and onward we go. God bless you all. Until next week.